It's good to have you here today. And yesterday we began a new week together, and I told you that we'll be focusing on the truth that God is one. God is one. If you were here yesterday, then with a prompt, you'll remember that we talked about the meaning of the Hebrew word for God in Genesis 1, verse 1. In the beginning, God. And God is Elohim. Elohim. This is the Jewish name for God that Moses used when he wrote this text that opens the Bible. We had a little study on Hebrew grammar and concluded that Elohim, a plural masculine noun, is not plural in the sense of more than one, but plural in the Hebraic sense of honor, a plural of honor. So the Hebrews added I am here as a way to give highest, greatest, fullest honor to God. Grammatically in Hebrew, the plural ending I am actually gives the greatest honor to God that can ever be given. I believe we best understand Elohim when we understand Elohim to mean the greatest God of all, the greatest God of all. And we saw this in the Bible when we turned to Deuteronomy chapter 10 and verse 17, which captures this perfectly. For the Lord your God is the God of gods and the Lord of lords, the great, the mighty, and the awesome God. That ended our Hebrew grammar lesson, but left us with a question. The statement, Elohim is the greatest God of all, might still cause you to ask, is there more than one God? The answer according to the Bible is no. Remember the big insight I'm giving you this week, God is one. There is only one God. So why does Moses, who wrote Genesis, choose to use Elohim here? This is what I want to talk about today. When you think about it, the one true God of the Bible has to deal with other gods. And why does God have to do this? Because God is practical. He deals with the world and the people in the world the way he finds them. God, who knows everything, knows that human beings are going to believe in the existence of more than one God. He knows that we will concoct or make up gods, small g, to worship, to bow down to make us feel better about ourselves, and then to boldly and firmly introduce to other human beings, such as our children and grandchildren. Let's take, for example, Hinduism. This is a religion or set of religious beliefs. In India, they would call this Dharma, that worships some 330 million deities or gods. It's pantheistic, meaning that God is everything and everyone, and that everyone and everything is God. Let me say that again. God is everything and everyone, and that everyone and everything is God. So, quote-unquote, Mother Nature should be worshipped. God is a tree, God is the sun, etc. Animals are gods, and even you may be a god. And lest you think Hindus are a small minority of people in the world, estimates I've read are that over 1 billion people, 1 billion with a B people, can be counted as Hindus. I would not be surprised if I am speaking to people right now who are Hindu, or Jainist, or Sikhs, which have similar views of quote-unquote God. Thinking in terms of geography, a majority by far of the people living in the nation of India are Hindus of some type. If you visit India, or just go for great Indian cuisine in New England, and you are observant, you will encounter this way of life. But the Bible teaches that God is one. There's only one God. And yet the one God, Elohim, knows that Hinduism will rise to dominate the minds and hearts and actions of a billion people. So the Bible deals with gods, plural, small g, and this is just one of the world's religions. If I had time, I would give you more examples, and I would start with Buddhism that has over 500 million followers globally. Today, forms of Buddhism are growing very popular in the United States. In fact, I was at a dinner party just the other night, and the host was a Christian. She turned to me and asked me to pray for the food, but then looked at this other guest and asked, "Do you mind?" The woman said, "No, go ahead." And I wondered, why would the host ask her that? I prayed, and afterwards, as we were getting our food, I found myself seated next to this woman, and as we talked, I mentioned that I noticed that she had asked or rather Ben asked, if she would object to the prayer before the meal. She told me, "I'm a Buddhist." I asked all sorts of questions, and we discussed what Buddhism really is. Now, her idea of God was very different than mine. She told me straight away that it's complex because there are many forms of Buddhism and what is meant by God within Buddhistic thought and practice. Understanding Buddhism would take weeks of careful study, but that's not the direction I want to go today. By the way, I might add, if you have a certain stereotype of a Buddhist and who they are or how they act or dress, then you would perhaps be surprised to find out that this woman was a very well-educated lawyer, dressed as modern as could be, a mother of two with a very important and high-ranking job in a well-known and international firm. She was not an unshaven sort of philosophical monk who sat on the floor cross-legged and chanted half the night. But as we consider other gods besides the one true God, we also have to think about the various religion philosophies that have arisen since God created the world in Genesis 1. Let's consider, for example, the period historians call classical antiquity that covers ancient Greece and ancient Rome, the Greco-Roman world. Since these empires dominated the time and intersect with biblical New Testament times, these are worth a quick look. The Greeks had no shortage of gods, plural. There is Zeus. The Roman name is Jupiter, and he reigned from Mount Olympus as the king of the gods. And his wife is supposedly the goddess Hera. Her Roman name is Juno. She is the goddess of marriage, mothers, and families. The god of the sea is Poseidon. Neptune, according to the Romans, he carries that three-pointed trident. In an agrarian society, you have to have a goddess of agriculture, Demeter, and there is Artemis, Diana to the Romans, and Aphrodite, Venus to the Romans, who's the goddess of love and beauty, and of course Dionysus, or Bacchus to the Romans, the god of wine, and many, many more. There are gods for all sorts of reasons and purposes, and yet, amidst all the gods worshipped in the ancient Greco-Roman world, Elohim, the God of the Bible, was largely ignored. Fast forward now to today, and let's take the conversation outside the context of the formally recognized religions. There's another kind of religion that worships many gods. It's called postmodernism, and it emphasizes the individual and meeting the individual's immediate need for pleasure. And so all around us today, and we better look inside ourselves now and be self-critical, people are worshiping at the altar of the television, Netflix, the video game console, the web browser with websites like YouTube and sites that cover everything from shopping to pornography, and of course the mobile phone with apps like Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and Twitter. And these are just the ones I can think of at this moment. Any teenagers listening, no doubt by podcast, I mean, who listens to radio anymore? What am I missing? Because undoubtedly, some of what I have listed is even out of date. Hours upon hours are spent watching screens and filling the mind and heart with the gods of this world. It's stunning, isn't it? How much we know about people that we will never meet, and yet we have made them multimillionaires by following them and watching their sad and sorrowful lives unfold on television, in film, and via social media. The show American Idol is no longer as popular as it once was. I never watched it, but I always thought the word idol was very appropriate. We make idols out of people and worship them all the time. Which brings me to sports. Now here I have a big confession to make. As I critique my own life, I often find myself asking forgiveness from the one true God for how much time, and even more so emotional and physical energy, I put into these Patriots, Red Sox, Bruins, and Celtics. Boy, do I love it. I mean, how can you be from Boston and not give these teams your undivided support, right? especially when all four teams have been so, well, great through the years. Maybe you are like this. For me, it's not just watching the actual game, but it is following all the commentary leading up to the game and after the game. I never miss a Belichick or Brady press conference. And then you have all the sports shows on TV, radio, the internet. Many of us make a god out of sports and build our idols around stadiums and players' lockers. And yes, the one true God has to deal with this reality as well. We love sports more than him. And then, of course, there are the gods of money, sex, and power. The world. Trust me, I travel quite a bit. The world is obsessed with all three. They go together with each other and with all of the other false gods I've just talked about. That's why the politicians who want to be God push Elohim off to the side so that they can keep center stage all to themselves. Well, you get my point. The one true God whose majesty and magnificence we talk about every day on this broadcast has to deal with this. He knows he is the only God, and those of us who believe in him and who worship him and who adore him know that indeed he is one. But billions of people either reject one God or have never heard about Elohim. They grow up in contexts where there are a multitude of gods, and they've never thought, well, there must just be one. They have simply accepted what they have been taught. Tomorrow, let's go deeper into the Bible and see how Elohim deals with other gods. So join me tomorrow as we continue to learn that God is one.